Yes, folks, you're listening once again to the voice of Truth and Sanity, the Hour of the Time, and I'm William Cooper. Rumors are flying across the country. Unbelievable. Folks, I only got one thing to tell you. Let me tell you a few things right off the bat here, because I think you need to hear them. Number one, if you're one of the guilty people spreading rumors, stop it now. Number two, if you hear something, the first thing you should say is prove it. If they can't prove it, tell them to shut up and get out of your life. Number three, there are no leaks. Let me say that again. There are no leaks. If something's being leaked, it's intentional to get you to react in a certain manner. Nobody's being rounded up. There's no war going on. No one is being killed. Do you actually believe that a multi-jurisdictional task force could lease a building in Dallas, Texas, and staff it with 5,000 people? Such an impact upon a community could not go unnoticed, nor would it be ignored by the press. No matter how controlled the press is. Stop it. Now. Before you make somebody do something that can destroy you all. The stupidity that I see every day and the unfounded rumors that fly back and forth through these so-called Patriot networks and the Patriot Facts Network and on some of these other radio shows, which I just finished listening to 2 hours of the biggest bunch of bullshit and unfounded rumor and calls that should never have been allowed to air because all they do is spread panic, and I didn't hear anybody prove anything that was said. What is the matter with you? When are you going to wake up? When are you going to stop hearing something and just spread it to somebody else without ever checking it out? There are no leaks. I know. I was a member of the intelligence community for many years. Leaks are intentional, made to make countries, populations, armies, and political forces behave in certain ways. You people are setting yourself up for a fall. And if you continue to do it, you'll get exactly what you deserve. Stupidity deserves a smack upside the head. And that's what somebody will give you. I don't know who it will be, but I guarantee you, if you keep behaving stupidly, you will be treated like a stupid animal, and somebody is going to have you for lunch. Thank you. Saxophones. I wish they'd start doing that kind of music again, but you don't hear saxophones very much anymore. Really fine instrument. In Michigan, the first meeting of the Constitution Party in Michigan will take place, ladies and gentlemen, on February the 18th, 1995. Plan to be there, and if you're from the surrounding states, you're welcome also. The state coordinator, Karen Scarborough, will be chairing the meeting. It will be held at 549 East Marshall in Ferndale, Michigan. That's 549 East Marshall in Ferndale, Michigan on February the 18th, 1995, 2 p.m. So if you're in Michigan, anywhere in the state, you need to attend, and if you're in one of the adjoining states and you have not formed your party or had a meeting yet, you're welcome to attend this meeting of the Michigan Constitution Party. Again, the coordinator is Karen Scarborough. You can reach her at area code 810-673-2693. Once again, 810-673-2693. It's the John Kuhn headquarters, and I have no idea what that means, but it's at 549 East Marshall in Ferndale, Michigan, February the 18th, 1995, at 2 p.m., and they'll be selecting county-level organizers at that meeting and doing a lot of good things. So don't miss it, folks. Don't miss it at all. In the Cleveland Plain Dealer, January the 3rd, 1995, an article by David Wood entitled Navy Subs Lose Doomsday Trigger, and it was credited to the Newhouse News Service. I've never heard of the Newhouse News Service, and so far have not been able to find out any location or any spokesperson for the Newhouse News Service. This is the only place where we've been able to find this article. And according to this article in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, which appeared January the 3rd, 1995, by executive order of the President of the United States Navy ballistic missile submarines, commanding officers have been ordered to turn in their launch keys, This is not good. It leaves the United States naked to an atomic attack by what used to be called the Soviet Union, which, while we have been disarming, they have not. Marines descend on Kenner for urban training. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is from the Metro, East Jefferson, the Times-Picayune, in New Orleans, Louisiana. From the halls, it's an article by Chris Gray, Kenner Bureau. Marines descend on Kenner for urban training. From the halls of Montezuma to the sheds of Kenner, they came Sunday. 100 Marines on a practice mission with helicopters, camouflaged trucks, and explosions loud enough to startle a neighborhood. The siege started when the Marines arrived at the 6th and Hollandaise Street area and attacked an abandoned warehouse and boarded-up house using explosives to force open doorways, spokesman Jason Johnston said. The bombing sounded far away to Robert Benintende until a shock sent his bedroom mirror crashing. I thought something had happened at Shell and Norco, said Benintende, who lives at the corner of Daniel and Toledano streets. Then this fell and scared the hell out of me. Other Kenner residents also reported hearing the explosions around 10 p.m. It's all part of urban training for the group, which hails from Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and has been practicing with Gulfport's 24th Marine Expeditionary Unit. The force must furnish practice before it heads to the Mediterranean in March, Johnston said. South Kenner was chosen because of the numerous boarded-up buildings the airport owns in the area. Johnston would not say how long the mission took. That's classified, he said. The soldiers pulled out late Sunday, moving on to Mobile, Alabama, and Kenner appears secured for the time being. But advance warning isn't a military trademark, and residents should watch their mirrors just in case. It could happen again, Johnston said. It goes day by day. Mediterranean, huh? Sure. Want to buy a bridge, folks? I got a bunch of them for you. Has nothing to do with the Mediterranean. It's happening all over the country. All over the country. You get fact on the hour of the time. You get truth. You don't get a lot of rumors. You don't get a lot of BS. You don't get unfounded, unproven reports. And we don't spread rumor here, nor do we allow you to when you call in. From Nexus, Volume 2, Number 23, will mobile phones become mobile ID tags? Not many people realize that the technology exists to track a person's whereabouts from their mobile phone handset via certain types of satellite. The next step in our technological evolution from the consumer's point of view is that virtually everyone will have their own personal mobile phone with their own personal mobile ID number. Each of these mobile phone handsets emits a virtually continuous signal, which is picked up by satellite or ground tower and relayed on. It is rumored that most handsets emit this signal even when the power is turned off. It is any Big Brother's dream come true in terms of knowing where everyone is at any time. It was announced in the United Kingdom newspapers recently that by 1998, mobile phones will go global. Your handset will give you access to a satellite-based system that will allow calls to be made practically anywhere on Earth. Iridium, a consortium of 17 major companies led by Motorola, proposes to launch 66 satellites in orbits crossing both poles. Ensuring a satellite will fly over every spot on Earth at least once every 9 minutes. At any one time, at least 3 satellites will be in view, enabling the handset's precise position to be located. Source, the Weekly Telegraph, United Kingdom, number 173, 8 November 1994, or 2nd through the 8th, since it's a weekly, 2 through the 8th, November 1994 issue. And Canadian neo-Nazi group created by Britain's MI5. And this is from Nexus, Volume 2, Number 23. Canada's government-appointed intelligence watchdog group is investigating allegations that the Canadian Secret Intelligence Service, CSIS, the counterpart of Britain's MI5, founded and steered Canada's main neo-Nazi organization, Heritage Front. These allegations are also made in a book titled The Ugly Truth About the ADL, which uncovers most neo-Nazi provocateurs as a completely controlled international product of British intelligence operations in North America and elsewhere, with the American Anti-Defamation League playing a special starring role. According to the Toronto Sun, one Grant Bristow organized the Heritage Front whilst in receipt of $50,000 per year from the CSIS, and then threw himself into running a small unit of the front that specialized in dirty tricks campaigns against anti-racists by infiltrating such groups and setting them up against each other. Sound familiar? The tactics of creating an imaginary enemy to justify funding are not rare. Take the recent case of U.S. mayoral hopeful Donald Mintz. He produced and distributed disgusting anti-Jewish leaflets and then appealed to the Jewish community for campaign funds to fight the racists. In this case, a local reporter caught him in the act and dashed all hopes of being elected. Source, The New Citizen, October-November 1994. Understand that, folks, when you listen to these rumors, artificial enemies. And don't be afraid. You see, if an attack does come against the American people from any source, within or without, if it does come against individual militia units, why are you afraid? You know, and you've been preparing for this for a long time. If it happens, you're either going to go to their aid and you're going to help them, or you're going to crawl in a closet and hide. And it's just as well that we find out sooner than later who's going to hide and who's going to help. You understand, dummies? I know you don't like to be called dummies, but I'll tell you something. The day you quit acting like it, that's the day I'll quit calling you dummies. That's the day I'll quit saying that the majority of the American people are stupid and ignorant and apathetic. That's the day that we might save this country. From the Jersey Journal, Saturday, December 31st, 1994. Hate material found in car along with dynamite sticks. Listen to this, folks, by Jeffrey Gold, Associated Press writer, Newark, New Jersey. Hate material, including swastikas and writings of Adolf Hitler, were found with several sticks of dynamite in the trunk of an abandoned car, police said yesterday. Police also discovered a videotape from a band called The Chemical Nightmare that they suspect may be linked to the hate movement. Satanic material was also found. Now I ask you folks, what is the hate movement? Who belongs to it? What are the clubs called? Where do you find them? This is an ADL scam job if I've ever seen one in my entire life. ADL written all over it. An abandoned car with hate material including swastikas and the writings of Adolf Hitler, which you can find in any library, but the library is not labeled a hate group. And there were several sticks of dynamite, and it's an abandoned car. And there's also a videotape from one particular band called The Chemical Nightmare. City police are still searching for the owner of the blue Chevrolet Nova. Nova. What does that bring to mind? Crash. Burn. And don't know if he was a member of a hate group or just subscribed to racist literature. Yet in the paragraph before, what do they say? Linked to the hate movement. This has ADL written all over it. You see how they operate? Yep, they're getting ready to attack all the militia all across the United States. Folks, there aren't enough government agents in this entire continent to attack the militia units across the United States. Don't you understand? And is it a surprise that they'll be going after the leaders of the Patriot Movement someday? I told you about that years ago when I published my book. It's right in there, written, clear as day. What's the big deal? Huh? Are you all turning to jelly all of a sudden? Have you lost your nerve? What I heard during the last 2 hours before this broadcast was sickening. I heard patriots turning into jellyfish. I heard fear-mongers and rumor-mongers, and yes, even a couple of liars. Unbelievable. The license plate, vehicle identification number, and papers in the car indicated the car belongs to an Essex County resident, Glenn said. Police have declined to identify the person. Abandoned car. Yep, an abandoned car. The guy abandoned the car, left his license plate there, the vehicle identification number, and all the papers in the glove compartment. Excuse me, folks. ADL all over it. Enough of that. It's meant for stupid people. The only reason I read it to you is because it goes along with what I've been teaching you on this broadcast. You can see it in action. Here's the Rapid City Journal. Rapid City Journal. I believe it's Rapid City, South Dakota. for Wednesday, December 28th, 1994. Remember I told you about the hostage thing in the school? And this confirms exactly what I told you, folks. This article is written by David Bowder, hostage hero, thought he'd be killed, Associated Press writer, Albany, New York. And I'm going to skip the first part of this and go right to paragraph. During the standoff in the State University at Albany classroom, Tortorici had asked in a rambling talk to speak to the president and governor and said he had a microchip implanted in his body. I was right again, folks. I said it on this broadcast on the day it happened, and you never saw it or read it anywhere else until it appeared in that paper, and then you heard it again here. Could the elections be rigged? From the Michigan News in Burton, residents in the Flint suburb of Burton will cast their votes in the November election by touching a computer screen. Genesee County Clerk Michael Carr said the test of the Patriot voting system will be the first in the United States. The system will be used in one Burton precinct. Burton already uses an online system to verify voter registration. The Michigan Board of Canvassers approved the Patriots' use in the state earlier this year. Elections Supervisor Eric Kaufman said the big advantage of computerized voting is the need for fewer election workers and faster vote tabulation. Up to 70 people have had to work until 2 or 3 a.m. tabulating the county's punch cards. Oh, what a terrible hardship. Oh, my goodness, Americans had to work for a few hours. Oh, my goodness, until 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. We have to change that. Oh, my goodness, we can't have these paper trails. Oh, no, let's have a voting system where you just touch the screen. And before you go in to touch the screen, we'll have voter registration verification by computer also, so that we can resurrect all the dead people we want to and make sure that whoever we want to get elected gets elected, of course. Never mind what the people want. Right? Results from the computer voting should be ready soon after the polls close. Oh, yes, they will. You better wake up. The alarm went off a long time ago. You people are still sleeping. More tracking revelations. Dearborn, Michigan. Dearborn police officers, and this is again from the Michigan News. Dearborn police officers are wary of a new tracking system. Yeah, I bet they're wary. They love it. But police official says it is a potential lifesaver. Transmitters linking Dearborn police with headquarters were being installed this week in the trunks of patrol cars. Using satellite monitors, the system will locate cars on a detailed map every time they move 1,000 feet and will monitor speed and use of overhead lights and sirens. All movements are recorded and stored. Dearborn will test the equipment for 90 days before deciding whether to purchase it at a cost of more than $200,000. Dearborn Police Chief Ronald Deziel says the satellite system will eliminate the need to guess which car is closest to an emergency. He disputed claims that police officials will use the system to keep tabs on officers. But union officials say the closest car already responds when an emergency is called in. That's just the tip, and I mean the tip of the iceberg. Let's go to this one. In 1986, GATT was considered a treaty. All treaties need two-thirds vote of those present for passage in the Senate. That's 66% of the senators. Then Senator Lloyd Benson, sponsor of Senate Bill S-1837, proposed a grant of authority to then-President Reagan to engage in a new round of GATT. On a talk radio show of November the 28th, 1994, Ross Perot and Pat Choate were asked over the air, quote, "Were 56 votes cast in favor of the Uruguay round?" End quote. It sounds like they did not understand, or if they understood, they attempted to answer her question by saying that the vote to override 1994 budget constraints was what she was talking about. She repeated the question again, and to our way of thinking, she did not get a satisfactory answer. The Congressional Quarterly, folks, which is available in your local federal depository library, states in the March 8, 1986 issue, page 556, quote, "The American Enterprise Institute and the Brookings Institution paid for a retreat for members and staff aides to discuss trade issues," end quote. The Congressional Quarterly of September the 15th, 1986, pages 2083 through 2086, goes on to say, quote, "This one, eighth round of GATT, will determine if GATT lives or dies as an international institution," end quote. The article goes on to say, quote, "The international business community is simply not going to tolerate institutions that are not doing their job," end quote. Now, this was stated by United States Trade Representative Yoder to overseas reporters on September the 3rd, 1986. The article goes on to say, quote, "See Michael Aho, a trade specialist at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York City, called the GATT a mirror of the amount of political commitment that governments want to put into it. There are times when countries, including this one, want to go off and do things on their own," end quote. If you want the audio tape or copies of the Congressional Quarterly, please call Facts Are Right. Call Facts Are Right to Charles R. Spross, S-P-R-O-S-S. Charles R. Spross, S-P-R-O-S-S. At Operation Freedom. That's Operation Freedom. Post Office Box 94123. That's 94123. Maitland, Florida. That's Maitland, Florida, spelled M-A-I-T-L-A-N-D, zip code 32794-1213. That's 32794-1213. You can phone 407-740-0224. That's 407-740-0224 or fax 407-644-2717. That's 407-644-2717. And another interesting article worth quoting comes again from the Congressional Quarterly September 6, 1986 issue, which stated, folks, quote, "The GATT's Tokyo round formally got underway in January 1973 when the Nixon administration officially lacked congressional authority to negotiate. It gained that authority by the time serious progress in the talks began 2 years later," and that's on page 2086. The question is, since GATT is a treaty, is it really in effect? Or are you all falling for another scam job under the color of law? Wish I had a creaking door. Really like that sound in instances like this. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Thank you. chicken pluckers running around with your heads cut off, trying to escape from getting put on a list. There's only one list, and you're already on it. You join militias, and the first smell that anybody's gonna come after you, you get scared. Woo-wee! Big bad militia. Oh, yeah. You better hunker down, just do your jobs. Stop all this baloney. Yep, you need guts, folks. You need guts. You don't need rumors. You don't need to hang your underwear out on Radio Free America or anywhere else. And you're going to need some gold and silver coin, real money. The only real money. Under the law, United States Code, and the Constitution, you see, the dollar is not money. It is an instrument of debt. It means that somebody owes somebody else some money. And according to the law, a note must say who owes who, exactly how much, and how it's going to be paid. So, according to the law, a Federal Reserve note is counterfeit. It's not money. It's not even currency. It doesn't even pass for money. It's not even a substitute for money. It's not even a receipt for money. And when everybody realizes this, and when things come down to the very basics, if you don't have any real money, you might die in a ditch, starving to death with no roof over your head. And you might as well understand it now. If you'd like to talk to someone about getting some real money in your hands, I strongly suggest you call our sponsor, Swiss America Trading, at 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-289-2646. You see, the law, the United States Code, states that money is gold and silver coin. The law states that a dollar is a unit of measurement which describes a specific weight of silver coin. The dollar is also used to describe the specific counter value of gold coin under the law. A dollar can never replace real money. It is just a measurement of the weight, which becomes the value, ultimately, of the money. A dollar can no more be money than an ounce can be flour, or a pound can be wheat. Do you understand? I hope you do. Call Swiss America Trading for some more information on this important subject. Your eyes might be opened. You might even wake up. Who knows? 1-800-289-2646. And I would advise you to do it right away, since we all tend to procrastinate, every single one of us. The quicker we do it, the better off we are. 1-800-289-2646. And now, right after this pause, comes a very important revelation. Thank you. From the Grapevine, January 6, 1995. The Grapevine, January 6, 1995. An article by Father Roy Bourgeois, entitled School of Assassins. And right at the top of the page is a big, fat photograph of the kisser of Lieutenant Colonel Bobo Gritz, former United States Commander, Special Forces, Latin America. This article, it says, and I quote, will restore the reader's faith in the ability of the human spirit to triumph over even the most frightening side of human affairs. Imagine, as you read this, Father Bourgeois is camped out at the very entrance of Fort Benning, Georgia, which is literally one of the world's two greatest centers for the latest training in assassination technology and lethal techniques. After being imprisoned for 3 years for the civil disobedience directed toward closing this dreadful school, still remaining resolute, it seems clear that the good father will let nothing stop him from his mission. And God bless you, Father. Lieutenant Colonel James Bo Gritz, or Gritz, as he likes to say it. We like to say Gritz. We like to say Bobo Gritz. Bobo because he's a fool to think we're so stupid that we'll never catch on to his lies and his deceit. And Gritz because someday when all the patriots in this country wake up to who he really is and what he really represents, they're going to have him for breakfast. Lieutenant Colonel James Bo Gritz is a frequent visitor, lecturer to the Phoenix area. Of the years the colonel served in Panama as commander of all United States Special Forces, Latin America, considered with the worst death squad activity, as this kind of political assassination, stealing elections, and other terror seems anti-ethical to the kind of constitutional form of government that the colonel seems to be advocating, the Grapevine encourages readers to save a few questions about School of the Americas for the colonel's next question and answer session. Specifically, quote, can a leopard change his spots, end quote. You see, I'm not the only one that caught on to this fellow. But I caught on to him a long, long time ago. And there are quite a few others who are catching on now, too. The School of the Americas, folks, was a very famous school that taught how to assassinate people. The school that Bobo Gritz is very, very familiar with. Now, the BATF has classified the 1873 Henry rifle and 13 other lever-action relics from the Wild West as ammunition feeding devices and banned their future manufacture under the new crime bill. The 1873 Henry, along with the 1894 Winchester, 1860 Henry, 1863 Henry, and other lever actions with long tubular magazines are all capable of holding more than 10 rounds of cartridges like the 38-40, 44-40, and 45 Colt. Hence, they are ammunition feeding devices and illegal, end quote. How about that? James Brady from Parade Magazine, June 26, 1994. For target shooting, that's okay. Get a license and go to the range. For defense of the home, that's why we have police departments, end quote. Thomas Jefferson Papers, 334. C.J. Boyd, editor, 1950. Quote, the strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is, as a last resort, to protect themselves against tyranny in government, end quote. Now, from the San Antonio Express News. San Antonio Express News. By the way, the page this article is written on is recyclable. Friday, December the 30th, 1994. New Year will bring tougher state laws to battle crime. Associated Press. Whatever else the new year brings, Americans will see a raft of state laws aimed at making them feel more secure. Uh-huh. Yep, take away my freedom. Put me in chains. Lock me in a prison and I'll really be secure. Mm-hmm. Around the country, lawmakers have come down harder on criminals, particularly young ones. They've also drawn the line on secondhand smoke in California, impatient drivers in New Hampshire, and stingy insurers in New Mexico. A look at state laws taking effect Sunday offers a glimpse of what the nation has on its mind. Legislators play to public concerns, and crime was the concern through most of 1994, said Larry Sabato, a professor of government at the University of Virginia. Now, for those of you who have my book, you'll notice that I wrote in there that drugs will be brought into the country, they'll be proliferated amongst the poor and minority neighborhoods, guns will be brought in and sold to those people, the drugs will be pulled back, the price of drugs will get higher, and they will become more scarce. And in the name of taking the guns and crime off the streets, including drugs, Americans will scream for security and give up their freedoms. I wrote that years ago. It's coming true, as almost everything that I've ever predicted, in fact, everything that I've ever predicted has come true, except for one thing. One thing, folks. And I've already told you what that is, so I'm not going to reiterate it again tonight and waste more time. According to this article, one of the toughest new crime laws is Georgia's two-strikes-you're-out measure, which imposes life without parole for a second violent offense. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean you and your buddy have a few too many drinks one night and you antagonize each other and you both take a crack at one another and there happens to be a police officer standing nearby and that's one? And maybe later you have an extreme backache and have a couple of drinks and maybe somebody irritates you a little bit and you yell and scream and throw a glass at the wall. Is that two? Are they going to give you life for that? Just exactly what does this mean? Voters overwhelmingly approved the punishment on Election Day. New Jersey's Megan's Law will require police to inform communities when dangerous offenders are in their midst. It was prompted by the slaying of a 7-year-old Megan Kenka, allegedly, untie my tongue from my wisdom tooth, allegedly by a convicted sex offender living across the street. Under New York's tough new domestic violence law, arrest is mandatory when someone violates an order of protection or stalks or hits a family member. Well, that's funny. Lars Hansen has been stalking me for years, and he's not in jail, no matter how many complaints I've made about him. In New Hampshire, killing a judge or a prosecutor now brings the death penalty. Torturing cats or dogs can lead to 7 years in prison, and making a right turn on red when the walk signal is on means a traffic ticket. Minnesota bridges the gap between juvenile and adult justice by allowing judges to hand offenders ages 14 to 17 a juvenile sentence plus a tougher adult one. If the teenager keeps his record clean, the adult sentence will be dropped. In Florida, where a rash of crimes by teenagers against tourists prompted the legislature to act, the worst offenders, ages 15 to 18, will be sent to new juvenile jails for 1.5 to 3 years. That's good, in my estimation. Should send the parents, too. Prosecutors in Florida will also find it easier to try 14 and 15-year-olds as adults. In California, that will be allowed for the first time. Illinois has lowered its threshold from 16 to 15. Also, violent juveniles ages 10 to 13 can be held past the old 30-day limit and be put in new high-security detention centers. These things I applaud. Virginia, Texas, and Illinois enacted tougher drunken driving laws requiring the suspensions of motorist licenses. In addition to new criminal laws, Americans in some states will see new safety and environmental measures. Starting on Sunday, South Dakota will impose a $20 fine for failing to wear front seat belts. Auto emissions will be tested more stringently in Maryland and Florida. Farmers must tell workers what pesticides they're handling or pay a fine up to $10,000. Tennessee lawyers must use recycled paper for court documents or risk losing their licenses. Well, I hope they enforce that. I wish they'd all lose their license. I saw a movie the other day, so I can't take credit for this. I think it was Philadelphia, where he said, what do you call 1,000 lawyers chained together at the bottom of the sea? The answer, a good start. And it is. And a smelly punishment awaits anyone who breaks a new Wisconsin law requiring people to sort their trash for recycling. A garbage collector who finds aluminum cans, newspapers, cardboard, and plastic with the eggshells and table scraps will just leave it there tagged with a note. Also, health insurers in New Hampshire now must cover severe mental illness on par with physical ailments, and insurers of businesses with up to 100 employees must provide coverage regardless of pre-existing conditions. Now it says with up to 100 employees. It doesn't say 100 or over. Pre-existing conditions can't preclude coverage in Idaho either, while big insurers in New Mexico must offer individuals and small businesses affordable health care. Socialism sucks, and so do socialists. As you're all going to find out, you think it's all free. Oh boy, wait till you see what it really costs. Yeah, then you'll really start screaming, but then it'll be too late, won't it? Frederick Bastiat, the French philosopher, economist, said this: when law and morality contradict one another, the citizen has the cruel alternative of either losing his sense of morality or losing his respect for the law, end quote. We Americans are increasingly encountering Bastiat's cruel alternative. Matters may be even worse than the dilemma Bastiat saw, for Americans may be losing both their sense of morality and their respect for the law. Traditionally, the common law assumption was that if one behaved morally and used common sense, the reasonable person, doctrine, some of his actions could possibly lead to civil penalties for mistakes and accidents, but not often to criminal penalties. That's the reasonable person, doctrine. With the growth, ladies and gentlemen, of the Leviathan state, that has all changed. Under what lawyer James V. DeLong calls the, and I quote, new criminalization, end quote, laws that regulations with their technical complexity and arbitrary provisions, no one can rely on his moral compass or common sense to steer him clear of either criminal or civil prosecution. For example, several years ago, an engineer was contracted to do work on private property. Guess what? He was imprisoned for polluting the navigable waters of the United States by dumping 2 truckloads of soil on dry land. He dumped the dirt on dry land and was accused and imprisoned of polluting the navigable waters of the United States. A rancher was criminally prosecuted for clearing brush from old irrigation ditches. Another man was brought before a grand jury for stabbing a falcon with a pitchfork as it was killing one of his chickens. Another was charged for shooting a bear in self-defense as the bear was trying to eat him. 500 Newark, New Jersey citizens were fined for putting aluminum cans in with their trash. The Occupational Health and Safety Administration, OSHA, fined a Boise, Idaho plumbing company $7,875
when company workers rescued a fellow worker without shoring up the collapsed trench and donning hard hats before they pulled him to safety. Fortunately for the company, OSHA was forced to rescind the fine in the face of public outrage. These, ladies and gentlemen, and possibly thousands of other examples, damage the societal sense of morality. You see, people who see themselves as responsible, law-abiding people, begin to develop a contempt for the law. And maybe that's what all this is really about. Remember the Hegelian dialectic? And when we lump what's trivial with what's barbaric as criminal activities, it undermines our sense of moral priorities, as in the case of Newark. You see, people perceive that the state deems it more important to successfully prosecute a person who deliberately or inadvertently puts an aluminum beer can in with his trash than to prosecute all the thieves, rapists, and murderers in the city. Deficits and debt are another example of our declining morality. We all know that we have federal deficits exceeding $300 billion with a B dollars and a national debt that's approaching $5 trillion. It's beyond the capability of paying it back. And if we were to include all federal obligations, such as Social Security, government retirement, guaranteed loans, etc., including the bailout of Mexico, which could be as much as $18 billion or more dollars, we could be talking about something closer to $16 trillion in debt. And this is something unprecedented, not only in our history, but in the history of the entire world. For the most part, the only time we ran deficits was during war times. In 1787, federal spending was about $3 million a year, or about $1 per citizen. By 1910, the Fed spent a little more than $600 million, or about $6.75 per person. By 1929, the Fed spent $3 billion per year, $29 per person. Today, ladies and gentlemen, the federal government spends over $4 billion per day. That's billion with a B. And that comes to more than $6,000 per year per person, including babies and old people and everybody in between, or, controlling for inflation, a 9,000% increase in federal spending between 1929 and today. And who among you listening to this broadcast can legitimately tell me that you get $6,000 worth of anything from the government? The colonists, who were paying about 67 cents a year in taxes, went to war with Great Britain claiming taxation without representation is tyranny. But folks, it wasn't really taxes they went to war over. It was the fact that Britain took away our ability to create our own money and demanded that we borrow money from the Bank of England at interest. That's what the Revolutionary War was really about. Our profligate spending is an example of moral decline because we've lost fiscal discipline and regard for future generations. You see, you say you care about your children and your grandchildren, but then you behave in a manner that tells me and others that you don't give a damn at all. Period. You question my decision to stand on United States soil and fight for my country, while whenever Uncle Sam requires you to send your children off to die in some godforsaken sand heap, that has nothing to do with this nation, you pat them in the butt and send them off. Now, After all, folks, what is the moral basis for imposing massive obligations on future generations in the name of bread and circuses? But there's very little indication or incentive that Congress will reverse what has become a pattern of gross irresponsibility. You see, in 35 years, we've had one balanced budget. And Congress makes pretenses. Congress passed the Budget Control Act of 1974. Is the budget in control? In 1979, Congress passed the Balanced Budget Act, which made a balanced budget the law of the land. Remember the 1984 tax increases that were widely publicized and sold to Americans as a down payment on the deficit? Has the budget been balanced? Do you really believe it's going to be balanced by these gang of Republicans? How about the 1985 Graham-Rudman-Hollings Emergency Deficit Reduction Act, which mandated a balanced budget by 1993? What year is this? And what is the deficit? What is the debt? And how many of you know that there's a difference between the two? How about the tax increases of the 1990 budget deal to bring the 1992 deficit in at $168 billion? $168 billion. Last year, folks, we had the 1993 budget deal, which enacted the largest tax increase in our history. The largest in our history. There's no evidence that Congress can ever or will ever get our fiscal house in order. In fact, the only chance Americans have to avoid ultimate fiscal calamity is the enactment of a constitutional amendment limiting federal spending to a fixed percentage of the gross national product, not a balanced budget amendment. Former Congressman Ron Kyle, in the last session of Congress, managed to get 70 co-sponsors for his amendment limiting federal spending to 19% of the gross national product. I hope he'll pursue that. But I don't see it happening. For I still look out across America, and I remember the tenet of the Illuminati. A nation or world of people that will not use their intelligence are no better than animals that do not have intelligence. Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. Good night, and God bless you all, and God save the Republic.